Support for the Source Podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Early voting is underway for the San Antonio City Council runoff election for District 1 and 7. Election day is Saturday, June 10th. Yesterday, we heard from the candidates for District 7, and today we have the two candidates for District 1, incumbent Mario Bravo and challenger Suk Kaur, who was the top vote getter on the May 6th election day. And for disclosure, I should point out that Suk Kaur is a TPR board member. Both are here to take your questions, and you can call in at 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We ask that your questions are open-ended for both candidates to answer, not just directed to one. Please don't speechify in your question. And we do have some rules for this candidate forum. We do start off with a two-minute opening statements, then we go to questions, one-minute responses, and then when time runs out, we do ring this bell, and we ask that the candidates limit their answers to talking about themselves and their positions, not to attack or characterize their opponent, and if they do, we get to the bell again, and then we ask the opponent to set the record straight. And again, the number to call in with your question is 833-877-8255. You could also email us at thesource@tpr.org. Now let's get started with the opening statements. And because she was the top vote getter, Suk Kaur goes first, and you have 2 minutes.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you all so much for listening in, and thank you to TPR for hosting us here in our beautiful new building. So for those of you I haven't had a chance to speak with yet, my name is Suk. I'm a first-generation American, first-generation college student. So I was actually born in India in the late 80s. We immigrated over here and got our proud U.S. citizenship shortly thereafter, when it was a little bit easier to get that. And my family started off in the flea market business. And so I always grew up working hard and negotiating for the nice pair of earrings that I wanted to have, and learned the principles of economic development and supply and demand at a really young age. But while doing that, we were focused on getting a really high quality education, and I had the opportunity to do so. I went to Rice University, got my bachelor's in political science, and thought I was going to fight in civil rights law and human rights law, and social justice has always been a really big passion of mine. And realized that if I really wanted to work in this field, the best way I could do that was by being in public education. So now, having worked in public education for 15 years, what I've seen is that your zip code that you're born in should not be the determining factor for the economic opportunity and access that you have in life. And that's why I'm running for city council, because the American dream that was offered to me, I believe that access and opportunity should be offered to everyone, regardless of your background, regardless of where you were born. I'm also a small business owner, so I've had the opportunity to work in the small business industry and understand the principles of economic development, why that's important. Having knocked on more than almost 10,000 doors as a team and 4,000 myself, I've seen the issues that matters for us most, and that's what I'll advocate for.
All right, and now let's go to incumbent City Council District 1, Mario Bravo, and you have 2 minutes.
Thank you for having me. I'm really glad to be here. And for full disclosure, I have been a TPR regular monthly donor for the last few years. But my name is Mario Bravo. I am currently your District 1 council member, and I grew up here in San Antonio. My family moved here in 1984 when I was in the third grade. I attended all public schools here, graduating from Clark High School, and went on to go to the University of Texas to get a bachelor's in history, and later returned to the University of Texas to get a master's in public affairs from the LBJ School of Public Affairs. And that's one of the reasons I really love serving in city councils, because I get to work on big public policy issues. My mother worked in education. I'm a big believer in public education. My mother actually she finished her career retiring from after working at several schools in SAISD. my dad had a small construction business. And so you know that when you, you know, when your family has a small business, everybody in the family works at the small business. And so we used to do a lot of work growing up at the Levi Strauss plant, and then they eventually moved overseas. And so we know what it's like for a business like that to leave San Antonio and how it can hurt a lot of small businesses. I'm really proud of my record of accomplishments over the last 2 years as your city council member. I can say that one of the things I'm most proud of is the partnerships we've built with neighborhoods and with developers, and being able to get them, bring them to the table to work together. You know, San Antonio is one of the fastest growing cities in the United States, and a lot of the pressure of that growth happens in District 1. So developers come and they pick a piece of property next to somebody's neighborhood and they want to develop that property. And so we sit down with the neighbors. We sit down with the neighbors early on in the process and we work with them to get to yes and find a way that we can improve everybody's quality of life.
All right. So let's go to the questions part of this forum. The number to call in if you have a question for the candidates, 833-877-8255. So Mario Bravo, let's talk about the elephant in the room. People know about what happened in November and how you were sanctioned by the council. You were removed from the committees due to an interaction that was seen as hostile with fellow council member Ana Sandoval. So people want to know where, you know, what happened, or how, what can you tell people about that, that you, that they should vote for you in terms like you give you another chance or something? How do you address that?
Thank you for giving me an opportunity to address that. And to be honest, David, I was disappointed in myself and how I behaved that day. And I apologized to Councilwoman Sandoval. I apologized to my council colleagues, and I apologized to all of my constituents. And it was a sincere apology, and I regret my words from that day. I will say that I never stopped working for my district, and I continued to attend committee meetings. I was quickly reinstated onto the committee meetings. I actually have the highest attendance record of any council member. And I can say that I've also rebuilt my relationships with all of my colleagues, and so I've been working collaboratively with them. They've signed my policy proposals, I've signed their policy proposals, and we've continued to work. We never missed a day of work for the district.
All right, and Sukkor, if you could talk about how that incident impacted you and your decision to run, or if that is part of your calculus and what you bring to city council, and you have a minute.
So I had actually been thinking about running since 3 or 4 years ago when I did Leadership San Antonio and was seeing the kind of the fragmentation in all of the industries and wanting to bring a voice that had experience in community engagement and public education to council. I do think it's really important for the leader of District 1 to represent our district well and to make sure that they have the temperament to get the job done. At the end of the day, we're one of 11 on the dais, and so you have to be able to build coalitions to make sure that you can garner the trust of your colleagues. And once that vote of no confidence has been made, it's going to take time to rebuild that. And so I believe coming in, I already have some strong relationships that I'll be able to use to help move District 1 forward and not have skipped a beat in the work that's happened.
Okay. All right. So let's go to a voicemail question that we received earlier. Let's give it a listen.
My name is Daniel. I live in District 1 in Los Angeles Heights. And the feeling that the people in this community have is that because we're District 1 and Encompass Downtown, so much of the priorities are for the corporations and the hotels and the big businesses. Things like sidewalks and speed limit signs and speed bumps seem so unimportant to government. And these issues are important to us. Two kids have almost been killed at Rhodey and West Almost Drive. Countless animals have been killed. The speed limit is 20, and they go by anywhere from 30 to 60 miles an hour. It's a blind curve. It's very dangerous. This is important to us, and we want to know when we will get prioritized. We're lower middle class in this area. We're not homeless. They're doing things for the homeless, which is good, and they're doing things for the very rich, which I question. Because we are the ones that built this country, and we pay so much, and we get so little back. I pay $5,000 in taxes, and there's no police or ambulance on a timely basis when we need it. Sometimes it's the next day or never. Thank you.
All right. Now, Sukkur, you have a minute to respond.
This is the number one issue that has come up at all of the doors that we have knocked. And I, first and foremost, commit to hiring as my first staff person someone solely related to infrastructure, because this affects the quality of life of our residents on a daily basis. If you don't have a safe sidewalk to walk from even your house to public places, we're not able to access the resources that are being built for us. And secondly, the streets and the sidewalks and the drainage system that you have access to shouldn't be the determining factor based on your neighborhood. And when you walk the whole district, you see that difference. And it breaks your heart when you're going from one side of the district on Kings to the other, and you see that disparate nature of the work. So I commit to making sure that infrastructure is addressed as my first priority if elected.
And now, Mario Bravo, you have a minute.
Well, first of all, Daniel's right. You know, the a lot of the neighborhoods have been neglected for decades, and I actually live just south of Daniel, and so I know what that's like. And so when I ran for office, I told people, you know what, I know what it's like for your neighborhood to be forgotten, and I won't forget you. And so that's why in my first term, I doubled the city sidewalk repair crews, and I'm calling for us to double it again next year. You know, that's why also we worked for the 2022 bond to take a lot of the downtown projects and move them out of the 2022 bond and move them into tax increment reinvestment zones. And that freed up a lot of money to be able to invest more in streets and sidewalks and invest in neighborhoods like Los Angeles Heights. And so we got that done in my first term, and we have an unprecedented amount to invest in, and we're moving forward on that.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're having a candidate forum for the District Run 1 runoff. We're joined by Mario Bravo, incumbent candidate, and Sukkur, who is the challenger. She also was the top vote getter on the May 6th election. Now let's go to a caller, and we have Nikita. Nikita, you're on the air live. Go ahead.
Thank you. I just want to know, given the fact that the District 1 clinical outreach worker for DHS for people experiencing homelessness was allowed to resign after multiple allegations of sexual harassment, what do y'all plan to do to hold not only DHS accountable, but also the police department and solid waste management accountable when it comes to not perpetrating violence against our unsheltered population, as well as offering them dignity and respect, given the fact that there is practically no affordable housing or permanent supportive housing at this moment? Thank you.
All right, Nikita, thank you for that. And Mario Bravo, you have a minute.
So first of all, you know, those are HR issues, and we're not allowed to discuss them outwardly. But I will tell you that I've never heard of that allegation. I'm glad you brought that to my attention, and I'm going to take this issue seriously, and I will speak with the city manager about it today. Then to say that there's no permanent supportive housing in the city, well, I will tell you that I've worked very closely with all of our homeless outreach professionals, and we secured $43 million to build permanent supportive housing here in my first term. We've already contracted out $32 million worth. This is going to help with people who are chronically homeless. A lot of these individuals have mental health issues. They're not going to be able to house themselves or hold a job. And so we're building this housing for them, and it's going to save taxpayer dollars because they use a lot of emergency services. And so it's a win-win, and we're getting it done. And as soon as we've built it, you're going to see a difference on the streets.
And now let's get a minute response from challenger Sukkur.
So with the homeless situation, what we have seen is that the point in time count has actually increased by 5%. So I think this problem is getting, or at least the data would say that the problem is getting worse. And so I think it's important for us to make sure we have a direct solution to help the people that are on the streets. Being a street outreach worker is an incredibly difficult position. Nikita, I can't remember if it was you that I talked to at your doorstep, but that job is incredibly taxing emotionally, and making sure that those positions are well-trained and that they are working with homeless in a compassionate way and not coming in and just displacing without a solution is really important. So we need to come up with a housing first solution, and we need to make sure that our street outreach workers are treated with, are trained well, but also held to a really high standard of working with this such an impoverished population.
All right, and now we have another caller. This is Steve, and Steve, you're on the air with your question. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for having me. My question is how will you increase teacher and campus police within the SAIC school system to work with students with neurological divergent orders and stop the pipeline into the jail systems?
All right, Steve, thank you for the question. And Sukakor, you're first with the answer. 1 minute.
So having a background in public education and having worked really closely with SAISD, I think that's this is an issue that's really important to me. Also, there are a lot of public education schools throughout District 1. So, you know, that's one of the challenges in our system is that we have so many school districts. We also have Northeast ISD represented in District 1 as well. But at the end of the day, I've talked to with a police officer yesterday, and I know the police force has folks that are actually dedicated specifically to working with the schools. So I think it's really important that we work to establish a trust between the police office and the school districts and make sure that when they're working together that they have protocols that they can follow and that they're really understanding if a student has a neurological disorder, how is the best way to support them? Because oftentimes that's a multifaceted solution and not just a one way directly.
All right. And now, Mario Bravo, your answer.
Thank you. And, you know, first of all, the city does not fund school activities. It doesn't fund the school districts. They're their own taxing entity. And you'll see that where their taxes are actually higher than the city's taxes. And so, you know, even though I've fought to reduce your property taxes, I've never voted for a property tax increase, and I actually did increase your homestead exemption, you may see your tax bill go up because of all the other taxing entities that are out there. But I will say what we can do in city and city council, and what I have done, is fund a lot of entities that do mental health work. We've funded them to the tune of millions of dollars from federal COVID relief funds, and I'm really proud of that. And I was one of the voices on city council that really pushed for that, because I believe that's a big need in our community right now.
All right, let's go to another voicemail that we received, and let's give a listen.
Hi, this is Michael. It's been just over a year that a gunman with an AR-15 weapon of war slaughtered 19 children and 2 teachers at their school in Uvalde. This kind of threat doesn't affect schools only. It can affect all of us in any public place. My question is, what can and what will the District 1 candidates do to ensure that we can go about our lives without the fear of being killed by guns at any moment? Thank you for taking my question.
All right, Mario Bravo, 1 minute.
Yeah, that's a really tough one, and I share that concern. I'll tell you that this is a conversation that I have on a regular basis with Chief McManus, because, you know, guns are regulated at the state level and at the federal level. And the truth is that we have we now have more guns in the United States than we have people. And so one of the things that I try to educate people on is we want to make sure that we're keeping guns out of the wrong people's hands. And we find that a lot of people leave guns in their car. They leave guns under their front seat. They leave them in their center console. They leave them in their glove box, unsecured. And so we're trying to educate people about not doing that, because people will break into your cars and then your guns end up in the wrong people's hands. In addition to that, I serve on the city council's public safety committee, and so I've asked for city staff to bring us a presentation on what is all the latest technology that's available, so that we can make sure that police officers have all the tools they need to do their job.
All right, and Sukakor, how would you respond to that voicemail?
So as leaders, we do have a voice and an ability to work with our state representatives to move the needle on this issue. It breaks my heart. I had a parent last week tell me that they have to train their child on what to do in the situation that a shooter comes into the building. And that parent was a parent of a second grader. And so Senator Roland Gutierrez was just actually, TPR was just reporting how he's working to push this work at the state. And I think it's important to build those collaborative relationships with the folks working so hard for us to move this issue forward, because it has come to a point that, not only children, but all of our lives are at stake, and we need to do something about it.
Let's go to a caller. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you have a question for our two candidates for City Council District 1, Mario Bravo, the incumbent, and Sukh Kaur, a challenger, and she was the top vote getter on Election Day, May 6th. And let's go to a caller, Liz. And Liz, you're on the air. All right, I think that Liz went away. So is there another caller we could put on? Let's go to John. And John, are you there? Can you go on the air?
Yeah.
All right,
yeah,
go ahead.
I'm here.
Go ahead.
So I operate a bar on the Strip, and my question to both the candidates is, in the future, how would you handle a rogue staffer abusing their power on your staff?
All right, John, thank you for that. So let's go to Sukh Kaur for your response.
So the first thing that I would do is make sure that I'm hiring a staff that understands and has the same values that we have heard from our community. As a leader representing District 1, we have to make sure that we are representing all voices and all stakeholders, and we've gotten a really good grasp of that now with the community engagement that we've done. So first and foremost, I think it's really important to make sure we're hiring in alignment to the values of the district. And secondly, if we do hear of situations that are happening, it's important to address them quickly and make sure we're having those conversations and making the necessary changes, because at the end of the day, what we know to be true is that our small businesses and our neighborhoods need to work together. We exist with each other for each other. And so it's really important that we repair that trust that I know that has been broken in so many parts of District 1 by ensuring that our small businesses know we need their jobs, we need their support for our city and our district to grow.
And Mario Bravo, can you answer the caller?
Sure, happy to. You know, we have a great staff on District 1, and they're very committed to the community, and they do their job. So if somebody calls and says, hey, there's a loose dog in my neighborhood, my staff will relay that to Animal Care Services. If somebody calls and says there are speeding cars in our neighborhood and we need speed humps, then my staff will relay that to the Public Works Department. If somebody calls and says, hey, you know, there's a bar that's operating outside of their permit, or they're operating in some ways that you know, we believe they're breaking the rules, we will relay that information to the proper authorities. And so that's our job. Our taxpayers are paying my staff to do that, and that's what they do. At the same time, I want to say that, you know, I absolutely value all of our nightclubs and bars out there, and that's a huge part of entertainment for our community, and it's a part of everybody choosing San Antonio because of the quality of life, and that's why I've worked so hard to get funding for them, $5 million in funds to help.
So let me follow up on that, because John mentioned that he works on the Strip, St. Mary's Strip. It's been stripped of street. That's part of the problem out there. So Mario Bravo, can you talk about what is the situation? What do you see as moving forward for that area?
Sure, I appreciate the question. You know, we've done so much trying to get that job back on track. We inherited that project. It was a messy project that was started under a previous administration. Their scope of work was chosen. The contract was chosen under a previous administration. And we found that one of the subcontractors was not performing at the level that we needed, and we fired them. We found that we weren't on time, and so we hired another prime contractor. We doubled up on our contractors. And so we're moving the project along, and you know, it's been painful for a lot of people there. I've heard their complaints. That's why I secured $5 million in small business grants for businesses adversely impacted by construction projects. And that's why I also passed the responsible bidders ordinance, so that, because if you have poor performance history in the last 3 years, you shouldn't be getting a contract to build for the city of San Antonio. And so we're looking to protect businesses going forward, and we've been helping the ones that have been impacted so far.
All right. And now, Sook Kaur, if you could talk about the St. Mary's Strip situation.
Yeah, so I think St. Mary's Strip is evidence of just poor planning in general. And regardless, everything that I inherit, I will make sure that I take on well and with pride. And I think it's one really important to make sure that no project takes so long, takes 2 years, and that we're not thinking about impact after folks have complained, but that we're proactively thinking, oh, this street is going to be under repair. What can we do as a city and as a council to make sure we're negatively or we're removing any negative impact that may occur and ensuring that we can mitigate any barriers? And so that's the first thing. And then the second thing with the ordinance, I think it's really important when we're claiming territory that we're making sure we're giving credit where credit is due, and always ensuring that we're I will always make sure I credit the council members actually responsible for putting on ordinances or putting them up on the ballot and or on the dais and saying that I supported them versus led them.
Okay, let's go to another caller. We do have William on the line, and William, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. As you all may know, many of the bicycle groups converge and travel and traverse along the roads in District 1. Do either of y'all own a bike, and do you ride with any of the groups?
All right, William, thank you for the call. Sook Kaur.
So I used to own a bike, but I haven't gotten a chance to get a new one yet since my last one got stolen. But I was a rider back in the day. I haven't had a chance to do so now, but I do think it's really important as a way to get folks out. One of the things that we know that we struggle with in our city is just the health and nutrition of our residents. So I think it's important that we're continuing to create safe pedestrian and cyclist ways throughout the city and working with infrastructure and planning to create complete streets, because complete streets allow access and opportunity and mobility for everyone. So I love and appreciate all the bike rides out there, and I'll have to get a bike and join y'all one of these days, because I back in the day, in my heyday, I did do the MS-150 at one point. So I need to get out there with y'all.
All right. And now, Mario Bravo, do you ride?
You know, I do have a bike, and I've gone out riding regularly with a SATX social ride on their Tuesday night rides, and I think that's really important to be able to ride District 1 to see what the challenges are. I had actually approached the San Antonio Report a couple of years ago, and I said, you know, you have this article series Where I Live. Why don't you do one Where I Ride? And people can talk about where they like to ride in San Antonio. And I rode one day to an event, and I found that, you know, there were sticks in the way, there were potholes, there was broken glass. And it's important to take note of all that and work towards not just making San Antonio bikeable with bike lanes, but with protected bike lanes. And that's what I'm really focused on. That's what I've been pushing for at City Hall.
Let's go to a voicemail, and here we go.
Hi, this is Justice from the northwest side of District 1, just south of Castle Hills. The number one day-to-day issue my neighborhood faces is stray or unconfined dogs. Residents in this part of D1 go on walks with knives, baseball bats, and golf clubs to protect themselves, not from crime, but from dogs. Dog owners have crumbling fences that allow their pets out to the street. Leash laws are virtually impossible to enforce and certainly won't do you any good when you're face-to-face with an aggressive animal. My family and I have been attacked in our own driveway. ACS is overwhelmed, and intake windows at other shelters are short, few, and far between. What will you do to make District 1 residents safer on their own streets?
And Mario Bravo, we know the dogs, it's a lethal problem in San Antonio. What's your projection?
You know, Justice is right. Animal Care Services is overwhelmed. They've been underfunded for far too long, and we're trying to scale them back up. And I've met with the Director of Animal Care Services, and I asked him, bring me a budget ask that gets you to where you need to be, to the staffing levels you need, so that you all can do your jobs. You know, in addition to that, you know, we've got problems with dangerous and aggressive dogs. And the problem in the state of Texas is that dogs are considered property. And so you have property rights. And so it really limits the city government in what we can do. You know, people talk about the Death Star bill and taking away, cities' rights to be able to pass laws. I personally spoke with State Senator Jose Menendez, and the city worked hand in hand with him to try to pass a new law to be able to go after irresponsible owners of aggressive and dangerous dogs, and we're committed to being able to implement that so that way we can do a better job going forward.
And Sukhkar, what's your take on the dangerous dog situation?
So I think they say that the best way to create policy is by actually experiencing it, because then you have empathy. And so when we were block walking, my dog and I got attacked by also just a roaming dog. And the situation was really frightening. And we learned afterwards that it was just someone's dog who was allowed to be out in their yard and saw us and chased after us and bit my dog. And so I've since looked up policy that's already been executed to help support ACS. And I found a study that was done in 2019 on the unrestrained dog policy, and what they showed is that most of these dogs are just roamers. And so I think we need to first and foremost make sure we're doing everything we can to communicate with our residents and let them know the danger, and try to create more code enforcement policies to help support getting them back into homes and increasing the safety of all residents.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're having a community forum with the two candidates for District 1 City Council. They're in a runoff. Election day is Saturday, June 10th, and we have early voting now underway. You can vote at the Maverick Library, Memorial Library, Wonderland Mall, Crossroads, Lyons Field, Bexar County Justice Center, also at the elections office. And you didn't have to vote on the May 6th, but to vote today. You can still vote if you didn't vote earlier. Let's go to a caller, and we have Philip on the line. And Philip, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Hi, my name is Philip, and I'm the president of Pride San Antonio. We're getting ready to celebrate Pride Month here in the city of San Antonio. One of the things that we're hearing from the community is that we want to designate with street signs, permanent street signs for Main Street from Dewey to Lexington, with permanent designation for an LGBT community. What steps would you take to ensure that this happens for San Antonio's LGBT community?
All right, Philip, thank you for calling in. And Sukhkar, if you could talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So happy Pride Month. I'm excited to be able to celebrate it this month, even in the midst of all the election activities going on. And so I think first and foremost, it's really important to build a strong partnership with the LGBTQ plus community. I've gotten a chance to meet with some of the organizations and know how actively engaged you are. So I'd love to work and see exactly where you would want those signs, build a partnership and a collaborative partnership with folks at the city to know exactly where they're going to go, how they're going to be placed, and then help you all make that happen. I know the Pride crosswalk that was done on Main Street was one of those things that our previous council member was able to do and was really beneficial and a show of solidarity and inclusivity in our district. Our district is the hub for the LGBTQ plus community, and I want to make sure that everybody in the community feels included, their voices heard, and that it is shown with whatever memorabilia or features that you guys want in the community.
And now, Mario Bravo, your answer.
Thank you for the question, Philip. You know, I'm proud to have worked hand-in-hand with Judge Rosie Gonzalez on putting up the pride flags that we already have for designating that area that are hanging up from utility poles. And we did that at no taxpayer expense. And, you know, I'm also really proud to say that I was involved in, I was there celebrating the first Rainbow Crosswalk, and I was there for the rededication of it. And, you know, a lot of people in the LGBTQIA plus community recognize that, and that's why I'm proud to say that I have the endorsement of the Stonewall Democrats, and you can count on me to continue to work with you all on these projects.
And let's go to another caller. We have Crystal on the line, and Crystal, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a question regarding the homeless, and I understand that money is coming in to provide housing for them. What do you plan to do in the interim, and also what are your thoughts about criminalizing, which they continue to be criminalized for being poor, and abatements that are affecting them? I just want to know what your thoughts are, and what do you plan to do to help these members, vulnerable members of our community? Thank you.
All right, Crystal, thank you for that. Mario Bravo, you have a minute.
Thank you. And, you know, I want to state first and foremost, and I've always been consistent on this, that homelessness is not a crime. And, you know, there are a lot of individuals out there who are chronically homeless, who are struggling, and we're building that housing. I'm glad that we secured on my watch in the first my first term, $43 million. We've already broken ground on two projects, and we've contracted out $32 million to help. And it's not just the compassionate thing to do. It's something that's going to save taxpayer dollars. It's a place where it's not just going to be housing, but we're going to have on-site mental health counselors. There'll be case managers on-site to make sure everybody who needs mental health medication is going to have access to it. On-site drug counselors to help people be stabilized and have a life of dignity, and also remove disturbances from the street and save taxpayer dollars on all the emergency services from EMS, fire, police. And so we're getting it done. We've already started.
And Sukh Kaur, if you could talk about the homeless situation.
So having experienced this firsthand just a couple weeks ago, I think the first thing that we see is they need a lot of mental health support. And we need to make sure that we are, one, supporting our street outreach workers, like the call earlier mentioned, making sure that they are not, they are treating, if they are the ones doing the work on a daily basis, they are treating our homeless folks with compassion and respect. And also increasing, working with the county to see what we can do to increase the availability of detox beds, and making sure that we are also even supporting things like the library card ID program, because that will allow folks to get an ID and access to services that are really important and necessary for them. You know, on the campaign trail, we had one of the candidates who I believe has endorsed the incumbent, who was just very much opposed to the idea of providing supports for the homeless. And I think it's important that we help and support them in a compassionate way, and making sure we're doing housing first.
All right, let's go to another caller. We have Dane, and Dane, let's get Dane lit up. And Dane, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm calling to ask what y'all's plans are in regards to affordable housing, and especially if you're planning on allowing more to be built.
All right, Dane, thank you for that. And so, Sukh Kaur, if you could talk about a plan for affordable housing.
So as we know, our city is going to increase in population. They project doubling in size in the next 10 years. And we know a lot of that density is going to happen in District 1, and that we have a shortage of housing. As we address affordable housing, I think it's first and foremost important that we keep people in their homes. And that means making sure that we're not increasing property taxes. And so I support not increasing property taxes, and making sure that we're voting on budgets that are actually will allow folks to stay within their homes and build programs like helping restore their homes when they need it. Second, when actually looking at new developments, I think we can be creative in the ways that we do that. One, making sure they're absolutely compatible with the homes and the communities that we have around. And two, maybe thinking about mixed-use developments where appropriate, or expanding opportunities to repurpose vacant buildings as well.
All right. And Mario Bravo, a plan for affordable housing?
Absolutely. Well, you know, the first part of affordable housing is not taxing people out of their homes. And I've talked to so many of our residents who are concerned about that. And that's why last year I helped pass the homestead exemption, increasing it up to 10% of the value of your home. In addition to that, in my first term, we passed the 2022 bond, which has $150 million in projects for affordable housing. We've already contracted out for the first round of that, and we're about to contract out for the second round, which is 14 more projects. You know, yesterday I was on the phone with the executive director of Habitat for Humanity, Natalie Griffith, and you know, she was thanking me for all of my work towards pushing that we need to increase home ownership in affordable housing, because that's how families build generational wealth. In addition to that, I want to point to the partnerships I've created between developers and neighborhoods, so that we can build more housing at all price points, because if we don't do that, people aren't going to be able to afford homes.
So when y'all were running on the May 6th ballot, there was also a Proposition A on there, which was not popular with voters. There was a lot in Proposition A. Mario Bravo, I read what you wrote about it. I really could never figure out like where you were exactly on Proposition A. You seemed kind of like all over the place. Could you clarify, like, were you against it, or were you for it? And is there anything in there that we can learn from how Proposition A, what good can we take from that experience?
Absolutely. You know, I was frustrated by Prop A, and so I took a nuanced position, because there were six different issues on there, right? And so you can't just look at it and say, okay, you know, I support all or I support none. You could if you did. But, you know, I'm the only council member who's ever worked to decriminalize marijuana. You know, I would love to see the state decriminalize it at the state level and tax it so that instead of drug dealers making money off of it, you know, we can reduce our property taxes. I've always supported a woman's right to choose. I have 100% approval rating by Planned Parenthood. The part that I had trouble with was taking away an officer's discretion to be able to arrest people for up to $750 in theft and $2,500 in property destruction. And so I actually thought we could actually look at the data because we already have cite and release. And where can we improve it by looking at the data and seeing, making sure that it's being properly used regionally and across all ethnicities.
So how did you vote on it? Yes or no?
You know, as a protest, I didn't vote on that issue because I was really frustrated that it was sucking all the air out of the...
So it's time issue here. So, Sukkot, you were in favor of Proposition A, didn't go the way you wanted. What good things can we have learned from that? And what do you think moving forward?
So the issue of most importance to me is women's reproductive right to access, women's right to women's reproductive health care rights. This is an issue that affects women of color the most, and mostly women in underserved communities. I had a student in a focus group the other day tell me, "Miss, my friend has a teen pregnancy and she doesn't know what to do because she can't get access to an abortion." And so I think this is an incredibly important issue. And like the question that we mentioned earlier about what can city do as, you know, when it comes to gun violence, this was an opportunity that I had to, as the only woman of color on the ballot and the only women in this race, to really speak up about this issue. And I did. From the beginning, I stayed true to the word of this is the issue that matters most to me. And I can commit that policy is difficult. We need to get both sides at the table to come up with balanced policy. But at the end of the day, voters can always count on transparency and accountability from me.
Let's go to a caller. We have Theodora. And Theodora, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I just wanted to ask the candidates, what do they plan to do about the crime, specifically in the Delview neighborhood?
All right. And thank you for the call. And so let's go to Sukkot to talk about the Delview neighborhood crime specifically.
So I think when it comes to public safety, this is the number two issue that is coming up for us at DOORS. So it's clearly an issue that we must address, and we need to have a holistic approach to the solution. So first and foremost, I want to make sure that we have adequate street lighting on every street, because particularly in the winter months, it becomes incredibly dark and difficult for folks to be able to walk safely and feel safe in their neighborhoods. Second, I'd like to continue supporting and working positively in a collaborative relationship with the police force to ensure that they have the capacity and ability to address our most violent crimes and spending their time in the areas that matter most. And then third, we also need to think about preventative solutions. So really working with our programs that can support at-risk youth or substance abuse and mental health services that would help our community in the long term to decrease the crime that's occurring.
And Mario Bravo, the Delview area, issues of crime.
Yeah, so we have, you know, we have too much crime all across our district, and, you know, Delview feels that acutely. They had a couple of shootings recently, and I was there with a lot of the community in solidarity for a candlelight vigil after that toddler was killed in a drive-by shooting. So it was a terrible situation. I can tell you that one of the things I've learned in my 2 years in council is that every neighborhood that has a big crime problem, all the neighbors can tell you where the crime house is, where it's coming out of, right? And so we have just created a new task force. It's called the Good Neighbor Program, and it's to be able to go and crack down on those houses and use all the tools that we have available to them. So that includes the police department. That includes code enforcement. That includes animal care services. That includes the city's legal department, and bring them all together on a task force to go after those crime houses and crack down.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, a community forum with the two runoff candidates for San Antonio City Council District 1, Sukkot, and also Mario Bravo. So the District 1 has been kind of reconfigured with the redistricting. It's gotten a lot larger. A lot of people have thought about, and I think this is something that council will be taking up in the future, if the districts have gotten too big and if we need to add more seats to San Antonio City Council. And so I was wondering, Mario Bravo, if you could go first, if you, do you agree with that? How many more seats would you want? How many, what would be the ideal number of citizens that you would represent?
You know, I've heard conversations about increasing the number of council districts we have because our city has grown significantly. And actually, that's why I fought for more funding for more staff, because we need to make sure that we are responding to our constituents, that we're answering their phone calls, returning their phone calls, answering their emails, going and visiting them in their neighborhoods and making sure that we're serving them to their expectation. You know, as far as should we add more council districts, I'd be perfectly fine with that. I think that's a conversation for the public at large, and I'd be happy to go along with whatever they need. You know, that's going to be a charter amendment, and I'm completely open to that because our city's growing so fast, and we need to make sure that we are serving everybody's needs.
Sukkur, how many more seats on city council, if any more?
So when I was walking the neighborhoods at the beginning, been walking since January, I was so disappointed that so many of them didn't even know that they were District 1. I had a woman at her door try to convince me that I was wasting my dollars because she was District 9. And I had so many families that didn't know or hadn't heard from their current council office. And so I commit, if elected, I may not have a direct influence on increasing the number of districts, but I truly believe we, even in our current setup, can represent every single neighborhood and every single community well. And I commit to doing that, regardless of whether you live in the Vance Jackson neighborhoods or Greater Harmony Hills or River Road or downtown in King William and Lavaca or Los Angeles Heights. I will commit to ensuring that I'm hearing all of your issues and addressing them and having a staff that is available and always ready to answer any calls, questions, concerns that you have.
All right, and let's go to a caller. We have Ben on the line, and Ben, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, I was just calling in. Question for both candidates. I mean, we always hear a lot of promises on the campaign trail, and I just wanted to know how each candidate plans on following through on their campaign promises, specifically in regards to infrastructure and funding for things like sidewalks.
Okay, Ben, thank you for that. And so, Sukkur, you would go first on that.
So I've given my number to everyone, and I want, if you see that I'm not following through, I want you to give me a call. I will commit to ensuring that infrastructure hire is the first hire that I make. That the first thing I do is sit down. I've already started trying to have conversations with city officials, but sit down and understand our entire streets and sidewalks map and create a heat map. I was talking with someone about where are the most intense areas that need immediate addressing in our community, and go down the list and try to help support in every single one of them we can. We have a lot of data that we've captured now throughout the trail, and I know the city has even more data. So as soon as I get access to that, I commit to staying true to the number one most important thing that I've talked about on this campaign trail, which is infrastructure. And you need to give me a call if I don't do that.
All right. And Mario Bravo, a follow through.
Thank you for that question, Ben, because these aren't campaign promises. This is my record. I am following through. I already doubled the city's sidewalk repair crew. I've already called to double it again for next year. We passed the 2022 bond, which had millions of dollars more for District 1 when it comes to streets, when it comes to sidewalks. And so we're working to make sure that we can execute those projects faster by making sure that we're not giving them to low bidders that have that have a poor performance history. I've also drafted my own new policy proposal that will that states that if you don't deliver your project on time, that you'll have daily late fines for that contractor. If they can deliver it early, there's daily bonuses, so we can incentivize with bigger carrots and bigger sticks to get those projects done on time and efficiently for taxpayers.
So the city council provides guidance oversight for the two major public utilities, our water saws, electricity, CPS Energy. People are concerned about, you know, paying their bills and also keeping the lights on, the wonky grid that we have nowadays. So Mario Bravo, what do you want to see doing on city council with oversight in this area?
Well, you know, I'm glad that I've already been working on that issue. And, you know, I approached some of the CPS Energy board members early on. I said, you know, that I pointed out that trust was at an all-time low. over there in the organization that the new CEO, Rudy Garza, was inheriting. And so I talked them into contracting for some outside expert evaluations to look at their corporate culture, to look at their management structure, to look at their operational efficiency, their financial practices. And they did. They agreed to do that. They contracted out, and they just got the results from these two independent expert organizations. And it's created what I'm calling a roadmap to success for the new CEO. And it's something that we can look at and hold them accountable to.
All right. And now a minute response. SuccorCorp, oversight for our public utilities.
So I think making sure that, one, we're positively working with our CPS ENSAWs to ensure that folks that actually need it have supports and programs to help pay back the debt that they may have or relieve some of that to get them on the right track, creating grant funds to allow folks to access when they aren't able to pay those, and making sure that when we do pass policy like the one of the weatherization debate that was happening, that we are really assessing whether the long-term effect or the current need of homeowners is being affected more, and passing policy that's going to benefit overall and not just a certain few.
All right, so that wraps up the Q&A part of our public forum. We're going to move to our one-minute closing statements. And SuccorCorp, you will be going first with 1 minute to seal the deal.
So I think what we saw in the May 6th election is that 75% of the district has already voted for change. And I believe that they voted for change because they want a leader that has the temperament to get the job done, that can build collaborative relationships, that can know the art of compromise, and that will always be able to take a stand, whether that means actually voting on the budget or making a stance on any proposition that might be up. And so I commit to being that leader. I have the unique experience, the skills, the engagement ability to work with all folks in our district, and believe that I can be a strong councilwoman for District 1.
And Mario Bravo, we have a 1 minute closing statement.
Thank you so much. You know, I'm really proud of the record of accomplishments that I have. Over the last 2 years, we inherited a lot of challenges, and we've gotten a lot done. We're making real progress. So I'm not just running on campaign promises. I'm running on results of having reduced your property taxes. I'm running on results of having doubled the city's sidewalk repair crew. I'm running on results of having delivered and contracted out projects to reduce homelessness in our community. And you can count on me to continue to do that. And I'll tell you that District 1 is not looking for anybody to be a rubber stamp, and they're proud of the fact that I'm willing to vote against a budget when I don't agree on it. They're really happy with that, and they want somebody who's willing to stand up for what they believe in. They're also looking for somebody who has worked so collaboratively with them, with the neighborhoods, with the developers, to find ways to get to yes, and we have a huge success record there, and so I humbly ask for your support again and your vote to continue this partnership that's been working well.
This has been a public forum with the two candidates for San Antonio City Council, District 1. Just heard from Mario Bravo. He's the incumbent. SuccorCorp is the challenger. She was the top vote getter on the May 6th election. Early voting is now underway. There's no voting on Sunday, but early voting will run until Tuesday. Election day is Saturday, June 10th. Early voting sites right now include Maverick Library, Memorial Library, Wonderland, Crossroads, Lyons Field, and the Bexar County Justice Center, and also the Elections Office. And I want to thank both of our guests, and this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
Has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kay Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.